While you are busy enjoying your lunch, while you are busy having some time from 1300 hours, take time and listen to OTR News Bulletin.
On the radio news analysis, we go beyond the headlines. We don't just tell you what's happening. We ask why it's happening, how it affects ordinary Namibians, and what it means for the country's future. We examine the structures behind news, connect policy to people's lived realities, and bring in expert voices to make sense of where Namibia is heading.
You want to get into touch with global governance, global diplomacy, economic relations, trade, statistics, human and infrastructure development, and you want to see how policy planning and policy implementation is connected in Namibia. Make time and listen to OTR from 1300 hours to 1430 with Happy Juju.
Eagle FM,
Good afternoon and welcome to On the Radar, right to you on Eagle FM. I am your host Ndafa Happy Juju, and I'm here to keep you company from now up until 1430. Now, today is the 3rd of March, 2026, and we have officially stepped into the rhythm of a brand new month. Now, March is no longer about setting New Year's resolutions. It is about measuring momentum. It is about asking, are the plans we made in January working? Are budgets holding? Are strategies delivering? Now, for many Namibians, the beginning of March signals recalibration. Businesses are reviewing first quarter performance. Entrepreneurs are adjusting to shifting market realities. Households are reassessing spending habits after the first 2 months of the year. And across the public sector, policies and programs are moving from planning tables to implementation phases. Now, right here on the Radar, a new month means shaping our focus. We go beyond the headlines. We unpack the economic indicators. We examine policy decisions. We analyze where opportunities are emerging and where caution may be required. Now, most importantly, we connect national developments directly to your everyday life. March is a momentum month. It is when early ambitions meet real world conditions. Are growth targets realistic? Is investment confidence improving? How are global trends influencing Namibia's outlook? And what should you, as a business owner, professional, student, policymaker, or investor, be watching right now? From governance updates and development priorities to youth innovation and private sector expansion, this platform is about connecting the dots in a way that keeps Namibia informed and empowered. And as always, your voice matters. So join in on the conversation on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, or via the Eagle FM website. Don't forget to subscribe to the WhatsApp channel. Now, whether you're tuned in from the capital city of Windhoek, the harbour town of Walvis Bay, Oshakati and Ongodiva in the north, or Mariental and Grootfontein in our farming communities, wherever you are, this is your platform, your conversation, your country. This right here is On the Radar, where Namibia's stories are unpacked, connected, and brought into focus. And without wasting any time, let's get right into today's conversation. We switched to global focus on the Strait of Hormuz at the center of energy and security concerns. Now, the Strait of Hormuz remains one of the most strategically significant waterways in the world, serving a critical corridor for global energy supplies and international trade. Positioned between Iran to the north and Oman and the United Arab Emirates to the south, the Strait of Hormuz connects the Persian Gulf to the Gulf of Oman, providing the only maritime outlet from the Gulf to the open ocean. At its narrowest point, the strait is approximately 33 kilometers wide, with designated shipping lanes only a few kilometers across in each direction. Now, despite its limited width, it carries roughly 20% of global petroleum liquids consumption, making it widely regarded as the world's most important oil choke point. Now, several major oil producing nations depend on the strait to export crude oil and liquefied natural gas to international markets. This include Saudi Arabia, Iraq, Kuwait, Qatar, and United Arab Emirates. On the demand side, large import-dependent economies such as China, India, Japan, and South Korea rely heavily on energy shipments that transit through Hamas. Now, in an unprecedented move, Iran officials announced the closure of the Strait of Hamas, a narrow but critical shipping lane along Iran's southern border, following intensified joint strikes by the United States and Israel on Iranian targets. Now, the closure confirmed by Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps marks the first time in history Tehran has asserted control over the passage by effectively halting maritime traffic. Iran's Revolutionary Guard has warned it will attack or set ablaze any vessel attempting to pass through the strait, now further intensifying fears of extended disruption to global energy flows. At least 150 tankers have reportedly halted in the region, with major shipping lines suspending operations and insurers withdrawing war risk coverage and risking threats to maritime safety. Analysts do warn that if the closure persists, oil prices could climb above $100 per barrel as supply constraints intensify and insurance costs escalate. Now, the escalation follows an intensified campaign of military strikes by the U.S. and Israeli forces against Iranian targets in the late February. But to get into that, into better conversation, let's catch up with an international analyst to explain it and really get into it so that we can understand it better. But let's pause right here while we call him.
Lipura nenge no wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku dite opoye ekukulile. Oshafafana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana. Onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna emi toda njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu kwa ndado inawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushendi fenawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge pata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM. Onora etatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile kongerewa nora etatu natu bali o etatu watatu o mafelane Eagle FM. The eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Welcome back. And now joining us telephonically is international relations analyst, Mr. Ricky Simasiku. A very good afternoon to you and welcome to On the Reader News Analysis. Eh?
Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you.
Hey.
Of course, now today we're shifting our focus on the Strait of Hamas. I think I would want you to give us a thorough explanation and an educative explanation as to what exactly is the Strait of Hamas so that you can do justice on it.
Basically, the Strait of Hormuz is a waterway or a passage between Iran and the Mustandam Peninsula of Oman. So they say the distance between the two countries is round about 30 kilometers. So it's basically a passage or a waterway which is 30 kilometers in width from one country to the other. So around this area, if you export products from countries up north, say from Kuwait, Bahrain, Saudi Arabia, they pass through this waterway or this passage called the Strait of Hormuz.
Mm-hmm. And why is it so significant, not just literally to any country that exports or gets oil from that side, and which are also fully dependent on them? So why is it so very significant?
Yeah, it is very significant because of the very reason that you have stated. So much passes through the strait, especially oil and liquefied yes. natural gas,
mm.
that's LNG, you say. And it has been turned into a geopolitical contestation, if you like.
Yeah.
Especially because United States has interest in the region. And on the other hand, of course, Iran being a powerful country to some extent in the region, uses this threat of Hormuz as leverage. So it's quite a very important waterway economically and politically for the countries that are vying for influence in the region.
Mm-hmm. Now, of course, recently Iran has announced that any vessel that attempts to pass through the strait will be attacked or set ablaze, further, of course, intensifying fears of disruption to global energy flows. Now, should this happen, or actually it has been halted already, how could this impact economies, and how could this bring it closer to home? How could this impact Namibia in terms of oil?
The impacts are quite significant. The data shows that 20% of global supply of gas and oil passes through the Strait of Hormuz, most of which goes to Asia, the LNG, most of which goes to Europe as well. So, Namibia buys most of its petroleum products from Oman, the United Arab Emirates, Bahrain, and other countries in the Middle East. So the closure of the Strait of Hormuz means there will be limited supply or no supply at all, as the fact stands at the moment. So if there's no supply of oil, it means the stock, so the reserves that we have in Namibia at the moment will be limited because we can't restock in the short term. And this also affects prices because the rules of economics is that when supply is limited, prices go up. So with this Strait of Hormuz being shut down for oil tankers, it means we will have to expect a sharp increase in oil prices. And as data presents in the moment, since the war started, there's been an increase of around 7% in oil prices, in crude oil prices. And Namibia will also be one of the countries to feel the effects of this ongoing war. As we have mentioned, or as I've mentioned before, most of our petroleum products are from the Middle East. So we expect probably in the short term, that could be in the next week, next 2 weeks, we might just as well get a petroleum policy statement from the Minister of Energy.
Mm-hmm.
That is, should the war continue. And even after the war has stopped, say it stops in the next week, oil facilities, or rather oil production facilities, have been hit by Iran.
Yeah.
So it's inevitable that prices will increase in the short and in the long term.
Mm-hmm. Of course, what would you say is the aim of Iran to obviously wanting to close the Strait of Hormuz? And I know, of course, it's because of the fight between them and the United States, and perhaps maybe trying. But what would you say is what are they trying to gain in this? What is that? What message are they trying to send out there, even to the United States and maybe to other countries out there? And what perhaps should be then, from an international relations analyst, what then perhaps would you say should be the response in order maybe to cause them to actually not close the Strait of Hormuz?
Well, they say that if I can't eat, I'll put sand in your food, right? I believe Iran is actually acting within that line. And is what we call asymmetrical power between the United States, Israel, and Iran. That is, one side is stronger than the other side. So the side that's not as stronger as the stronger side can use any means at its disposal to disrupt whatever stability exists around its region. That is, if Iran can trade this oil, then nobody else should trade. And you might understand that what Iran is doing at the moment is go for any assets that are linked to the United States. And of course, as I've mentioned, if Iran cannot trade its industries, including its oil infrastructure, have also been damaged. So it is doing anything in its nature to try to limit any other stability that could occur in terms of other countries. So I think going forward, this is a war of choice by the United States, of course, acting on behalf of Israel. And I feel like the United States joined the war because it does not want to be left out in terms of whatever interpretations of victory may be. Donald Trump would want to be within that history. You might recall in June 2025, the United States joined very late into bombardment of Iran, and I think that's one of the driving factors that led the United States to join this war. But there's of course opportunity for negotiation, which has actually been happening. Oman has been mediating between the United States and Iran.
Yeah.
Iran had offered to give up so much, which I think the United States was actually playing along. But the main problem is Israel, which does not want a strong Iran at any cost. Whether it's nuclear weapons or non-nuclear weapons, they were still going to go ahead. But I believe dialogue will follow, but at the moment I can't really predict when, because you might we all know rather that the supreme leader of Iran has been killed. That's a very huge, very heavy loss for Iran. It's like killing a president of a country of a certain country where the president is the head of state. So the Iranians have nothing to lose, and in my prediction, I don't see them coming to the negotiation table at any point soon. So the war will continue for as long as necessary, but eventually, of course, when a mutually hurting stalemate comes into place, we might see the parties going into negotiation. And I've been following American newsmakers, if you like. Some say Trump is interested in talks. The Iranians, at some point, the president said, the foreign affairs minister said they are ready for talks, but others are saying there will be no negotiation with the United States.
Yeah.
So let's see how the situation unfolds in the coming days or weeks, but eventually the two sides will have to talk.
Mm-hmm. Now, of course, we know that when two elephants fight, it is the grass that suffers. Do you think leaders, you know, those big leaders of such great countries, do they ever perhaps maybe sit down and expound on it to see when two elephants fight, it is the grass that suffers? Would you say, I think, of course, I know the war comes now for a long time, but would you also say now perhaps it is pride in trying to obviously be then in the history books that this is what happened and under my governance, and just where are we in this regard for them exactly?
I mean, international relations is interpreted through various international relations theories.
Yeah.
and I believe the United States, Israel, have foreign policies which are realistic in nature or that tilt towards the theory of realism. And that is to say national interest, security, first and foremost what drive these countries or what drive their foreign policy. So they wouldn't give a damn as much about what the next country will experience and so on.
Mm.
And you might recall during the build-up to this war, Arab states have been trying so much to talk the USA against starting this war, but they failed. And like I said, it doesn't matter much. For instance, the United States, for Trump specifically, he wants to look like a great leader, like the types of Vladimir Putin, King Jong-un, you know, Xi Jinping.
Yeah.
And he wants that recognition in the history of America and the world. So he wouldn't mind as much what Namibia would think or what Qatar would think. And at the same time, you have Israel. Israel is concerned about its own security, as they say, and they want to be the dominant country in the region. They want to dictate. For Americans as well, it's about what they can get from Iran. How do they get it? They can only get it by force. So it's all about national interest and nothing else. So it's inevitable for countries that practice realism, real politicking, into those theories. So it is what it is.
Mm-hmm. Now maybe on my last question, what advice would you give to business people who normally obviously travel to Qatar, Dubai, all such maybe business visits that, you know, there was a business a trip or there is a business trip that one cannot really avoid and they definitely want to go? Or, and also, secondly to that, what advice perhaps would you give to Namibians who are within those countries now at this particular point in time? And maybe those who are also planning or thinking to relocate for greener pastures?
Well, I mean, for the people that have found themselves in those countries at this specific moment, we can all only say they should adhere to the plans that have been put in place by those countries, because as we know, air transportation has been shut in most of those countries, because I mean, it's a war. You fly an aeroplane, it can get shot by anything. So perhaps people should stay home, as the announcements have been made by government officials in those countries. And also, the other thing I would like to emphasize is,
mm-hmm.
during the build-up to a war, there's always news. If you look at countries like the United States or the Europeans,
yeah. They
usually give alerts to say, Americans, leave this territory, do not travel to this territory. And those who want to, they adhere to this. But one thing I've realized in Namibia specifically is that even when we know, for instance, there's protests in Kenya, specifically government officials who still travel to Kenya, they don't take these warnings serious. I don't know whether it's because we just want to experience the moment. We want to say we were there. But, I mean, such information to say there's a development of this and that type of violence in a specific area should be taken seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And government should have, or rather senior government officials should have government special advisors who give them this information, and they should adhere to it, because you can't be embarrassed when the development has been clear.
Yeah.
So I think that's all I would say.
Mm. Interesting. Thank you so much for making time for us. I will reserve my next question in our next conversation, because it's quite different from what we're dealing with now, but also quite very important. But thank you so much for always making time for us, Mr. Ricky.
Okay, thank you for the invitation.
Okay.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And there we had it from international relations analyst Ricky Simasiku, speaking to us on the Street of Hormuz, in how, of course, Iran wants to retaliate by actually having it closed. Now, as state authorities and trading firms monitor developments closely, global markets brace for further volatility, and the full economic effect of the closure will depend on the duration of the close. Now, or the impulse, the response of alternative supply routes and diplomatic efforts to de-escalate the conflict. And you did hear the international relations analyst speaking that even if the closure is not as long as perhaps people anticipated, we will still feel the effect of that, you know. Now, with that being said, let's pause right here. Of course, this is On the Radar News Analysis. We take a trip to the marketplace. We're back with news beyond, not beyond the borders yet. We'll still be back with news within the borders of Namibia. So stay tuned.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa Eva Tero ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku tete opoye ekukurile oshafafana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka okukwetira oipindi konu kondado inawa nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudi tayo loka opone ushendi fenawa nukumona oijo.
Why pay more when you can pay less at USave stores? Enjoy nutritious and delicious meals for the whole family. 4 kilogram of real good frozen and mixed chicken portions for only 199.99 Namibian dollars. 5 kilos of Polana pasta, just 129.99 Namibian dollars. 500 grams Romy 37% fat spread, just 13.99 Namibian dollars. 700 milliliter crystal gold tomato sauce, just 24.99 Namibian dollars. USave, where good food costs less.
Omarudi tayo loka opone ushendi fenawa nokumona oijamoiri nawa ninge pata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM onora esatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile ko berewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu o mafelane Eagle FM the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa Eva Tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku tete opoye ekukurile oshafafana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka okukwetira oipindi konu kondado inawa nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudi tayo loka opone ushendi fenawa nokumona oijamoiri nawa ninge pata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM onora etatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile ko mberewa nora etatu natu bali o etatu watatu o mafelane Eagle FM the eye.
Welcome back, and now we get into other news. Namibia records 193 million trade surplus in January 2026, and this is according to the International Merchandise News Bulletin released by the Namibia Statistics Agency. Namibia recorded a trade surplus of 193 million Namibian dollars in January 2026, with exports valued at 11.4 billion Namibian dollars and imports at 11.2 billion Namibian dollars. Now, exports rose by 6.7% compared to December 2025 and increased by 12.8% year on year. Imports grew marginally by 1.2% month on month, but declined by 14.1% compared to January 2025. South Africa and China are leading trade flows. Now, South Africa was Namibia's largest export destination, as usual, accounting for 22.6% of total exports, followed by China at 20.0%. Now, France, Zambia, and Botswana completed the top five export markets. On the import side, South Africa maintained its position as Namibia's largest supplier, contributing 31.2% of total imports. China followed with a 16.3% share. Zambia, India, and Bahrain were also among the leading sources of imports. Now, uranium accounted for the largest share of Namibia's export basket at 26.3%, followed by non-monetary gold at 15.8%, fish, precious stones, diamonds, and ores and concentrates of base metals were also among the top exported commodities. Petroleum oils were the leading import commodity at 16.9% of total imports. Nickel ores and concentrates ranked second with 7.1%. Now, other major imports included commercial motor vehicles, steam and vapor regenerating boilers, and passenger motor vehicles. Now, by economic grouping, the OECD was the largest export market in January 2026, accounting for 30.9% of total exports. The Southern African Customs Union, also known as SACU, followed at 29.4%, while the European Union contributed 23.6%. BRICS Plus accounted for 21.6%, and SADC, excluding SACU, represented 13.8%. Now, the import side, SACU remained the largest source of Namibia's imports at 31.9%, followed by BRICS Plus at 25.3% and the OECD at 18.5%. Now, common market for Eastern and Southern Africa, COMESER, and the European Union occupied the fourth and fifth positions at 10.2% and 10.1% respectively. In terms of transport, sea flight accounted for 56.0% of total export value, followed by air transport at 23.3% and road transport at 20.7%. Now, for imports, road transport led at 56.3% of total import value, with sea transport contributing 39.7% and air transport at 4.0%. Under the African Continental Free Trade Area, Namibia was a net exporter during the period under review, that is January 2026, exporting more to African countries than it imported, and that's a wonderful thing. Now, in trade related to food items and beverages, Namibia recorded a surplus of 1.2 billion Namibian dollars in food products, while beverages registered a trade deficit of 240 million Namibian dollars. Now, an analysis of honey trade showed that in January 2026, Namibia imported honey valued at 135 million Namibian dollars, making it the commodity of the month, primarily from South Africa. Now, on the export side, honey exports were minimal, valued at 10 Namibian dollars, destined for the United States. Now, the January figures reflect continued strength in mineral exports and sustained regional trade integration, resulting in a positive trade balance for the month. Overall, honey is the commodity of the month. Now, with that being said, let's pause right here, take a trip to the marketplace. Of course, we have more coming your way. Stay tuned right here on the Radar News Analysis.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Ipura nenge no wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maundu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku tete opoye ekukulile oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano ile koshiwana onongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa nuneudo otukwetira o special angeta shake ngeshe faa omarudi tayo loka opone ushendife nawa nukumona oijamoiri nawa ninge kwa tafanona Monica ko Eagle FM onora etatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile kumberewa nora etatu natu bali o etatu batatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye.
Welcome back. Now, Kavango East residents of the Mukwe and Rundura constituencies in Kavango East region have welcomed the allocation of 10 million Namibian dollars for the construction of two new sports fields, a development expected to create approximately 45 local jobs during the construction phase. Now, the projects were officially launched during a groundbreaking ceremony held in Divundu. On Saturday, the event drew community members, youth groups and traditional leaders who described the initiative as a long overdue investment in grassroots sports development. Now, Kavango East Governor Julius Hamunyela Yambuka said the construction of the facilities aims to address the long-standing shortages of proper sports infrastructure in rural areas where young people often lack safe and suitable spaces to train and compete. Yambuka emphasized that sports plays a vital role in social development, youth empowerment, and crime prevention. He urged the contractor to ensure quality workmanship, transparency and timely completion of the projects while prioritizing the employment of local harbor. Let's now take a listen to Kavango East Governor Julius Hamunyela Mbayuka.
I welcome you all to this momentous occasion. The groundbreaking ceremony for the construction of a base sport field in the Mukwe and Rundurura constituencies for this financial year. Today marks not just a symbol or a symbolic laying of bricks and earthworks, but a significant milestone in our shared vision for community upliftment, youth empowerment, and sustainable socio-economic development. For the community of Mukwe and Rundurura, the lack of adequate sport infrastructure has long been a barrier to nurturing talent and promoting active lifestyle. Today,
we take a bold step towards addressing these historical gaps and enabling our young people to thrive both on and off the field. Well-structured sport environments contribute positively to community health outcomes, social cohesion, and even economic growth. This field will not only host matches and competitions, but will serve as a hub of social interaction, empowerment, and opportunity, fostering pride and belongings among all. Guided by the visionary leadership of Her Excellency, the President Dr. Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwah, this initiative to construct best sport fields is part of the broader directive to invest in sport at the grassroots level, ensuring equitable access to sport infrastructures across all constituencies or across all 121 constituencies. Excellency has made it clear that sport is central to national development. By harnessing the energy, creativity, and ambition of our youth through powerful sport investment, we strengthen the fabric of our community and lay the foundation for future achievement and national pride.
Now, of course, let's pause right here, make room for a scheduled commercial break, but we have to continue. Stay with us right here on the Radar News Analysis.
Phew, what a day. Finally on my way home. And hey, the taxi's empty. So much room. Oh, no. Why is this big guy getting in and sitting on top of me? No, not the Mimo with the big bag too. Now I'm squeezed.
Sometimes in life, you just get squeezed. But luckily, with Express Credit's term loans, you can get up to 32,000 Namibian dollars to help ease your financial squeeze in under 15 minutes.
Ah, now that's a relief.
Visit expresscredit.com.na. Express Credit, money when you need it.
And one of us is...
Now, the Rhodes Construction Company has been appointed to oversee the construction of the sports fields, which will be located at Mayana Village in the Rundu Rural Constituency and near the Divundu Village Council in the Mukwe Constituency. Community members expressed optimism that the facilities will create new opportunities for young people and help steer them away from negative activities. Maria Mukoya, a resident of Divundu, said children in the area have long been forced to play in open sandy spaces without proper goal spots or market field. Now, our children have been playing in open sandy areas without goal posts or proper markings. The stadium will give them dignity and motivation to take sport seriously, she said. Also, local youth representative Petrus Shaningwa noted that the region has untapped a sporting talent but limited infrastructure to nurture it. We have talent in Kavango East, but no facilities. Now, with this field, we can host a tournament and even attract scouts. This is a big step for us, he said. Residents also welcome the anticipated 45 employment opportunities linked to the project, saying the jobs will provide much needed income for local households. Traditional leaders in Mukwe constituency called on contractors to work closely with the community and to ensure that local suppliers and laborers benefit from the construction process. The two sports fields form part of a broader regional strategy to expand basic sports infrastructure to all constituencies, in Kavango East, with the remaining four constituencies expected to receive facilities in the next financial year. Let's now take a listen to Dasius Nelumbu, who is the interim CEO of the RCCC, or the Roads Construction Company, which has been awarded this tender.
An honor for RCC to be here with you today. We, as we break grounds for this port facility in Kavango, this region, I would want to draw your attention to an old saying which encourages those that would want to take the first step towards a specific goal. And it goes, he who does not start anything shall not complete anything. He who does not start anything shall not be expected to complete anything. Bokavango East, you have started something, and we will hold your hand to complete it. We would want to say thank you for selecting RCC as the main contractor at this project. Today marks the commencement of work here at these grounds. It signifies new jobs for many. It brings hope to the community. Therefore, our approach remains the same to this project and others, that such work which can be done without machines will be done by the people of this region. The work that cannot be done by the people can be done with the machine. However, the work that can be done by people without machine shall be done by the people of this region. Yes, we live in one Namibia, and we believe in one Namibia, one nation. However, we will prioritize the people of Kavango East region at this project. This is the reason why we have teamed up with Superka Trading CC, a Kavango East local contractor, to construct with us here in Mupe constituency the much needed sport field. As a nation, we will not achieve growth at home without capacitating our own. We can only achieve so through intentional partnership with those that we believe can do so. We are doing so, and by doing so, we are contributing to capacity building at home. We will also ensure that various work are carried out by our local SME, and I mean local SME from the region, some from Ubuntu town, some from elsewhere within the region. Skills transfer is key. It's key and enables future capacity. You can't expect to have future capacity if you do not do skills transfer. This is why our technical partners or partner will be involved in this project implementation to make sure that there is skills transfer, so that tomorrow when we want to build another sport stadium somewhere else, we are able to count on the skills that have been transferred from our technical partners to our local contractors. I want you to remember this, that no one was born an expert, none. When we come out of our own mother's womb, nobody came out with a title, "I'm an expert at anything." Each one of those who call themselves experts were taught by somebody, Each large company you see today started somewhere without nothing. It takes time and practice to become good at whatever that you do. Whether you are a contractor, you are a salesperson somewhere, you are a lecturer somewhere, you have to start somewhere for you to learn what is it that you are doing and for you to become good at it. Therefore, to our SMEs all over Namibia, do not be discouraged because you don't know how. Don't be discouraged because you don't know how. Just remember, the person you are asking to help you, they were also helped when they were in your shoes. Somebody helped them so that they are now able to help you to gain that skill. They got help just like you, asking them to help you. Therefore, we do not expect you to be an expert. We might as well learn a thing or two from you. We might not know really what is it that you don't know, but as you come on board, as you practice, we might learn a thing or two from you. We are here to help each other. In terms of employment, this project is expected to create another 45 new jobs during the construction phase. This number can obviously increase as we hand over those work that can be done by hand to the people of the region. To the regional leadership, we commit ourselves to deliver this project on time and within the available budget. We will work closely with the stakeholders to ensure fair and equitable participation in this project. In conclusion, allow me to sincerely thank the Honorable Governor of Kabongo East Region and his team and the whole regional leadership for the confidence placed in RCC to be the leader in constructing this much important sport field. Our promise to you is that we will deliver as we have done so before at other national projects. With that being said, I thank you.
Now, the development aligns with the national drive to strengthen sports infrastructure across Namibia. Following an announcement by President Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwah outlining an ambitious nationwide upgrade plan during the launch of the 6th National Development Plan, NDP-6, and a report marking her first 3 months in office, Nandi-Ndaitwah revealed that all 14 regions have identified at least one site for the establishment of sports centers of excellence and Confederation of African Football Standard Stadium. Now, a total of 16 sites have been confirmed nationwide with assessments completed for CAF Category 2 and Category 3 stadiums, which are expected to accommodate approximately 10,000 and 30,000 spectators, respectively. Now, the president also confirmed that the CAF Category 3 upgrade of the Independence Stadium is progressing according to the plan, with a multidisciplinary team having submitted a feasibility study in February 2025. Construction has already commenced on the Confederation of African Football, that is CAF Category 3 stadiums in Enana and Kurankuru, with Mariental having been identified as the third site for a new stadium. Now, of course, with that being said, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. We'll be back shortly with economic indicators as well as news beyond the borders of Namibia. Also, get ready to call in and air opinions or contributions right here on the Radar News Analysis. 0832888401 is the number in studio.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa Eva Tere ulikoni maondu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite opoye ekukurile oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano hile koshiwana onongeshe fai ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitida mo Eagle FM otuna emito danjuka okukwetera oipindi kono kondado inawa. Nune uto, otukwetera o special angenda shake ngejefa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushendife nawa, nokumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge pata fanona, Monica ko Eagle FM, onora etatu imwe bali heali, nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile kumberewa, nora etatu natu, bali o etatu watatu, omafelane Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM.
Lipura nengeno wapubwa Eva tere ulikoni maundu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku tete okoye ekukulile.
Care that builds with you. That's the rollover benefit from NHB. When you claim less than a defined amount of your day-to-day benefits in a year, the unused amount is carried over for the next year, like a savings account for your health. You can use your rollover benefit in many ways, from co-payments to medical costs usually not covered, even contribution holidays. Learn more at nhb.com.na. T's and C's apply. NHB, rooted in care for you.
Your health, your life, your peace of mind. NHB, we're about you.
Welcome back, and now for some economic indicators. 1 US dollar today is equals to 16 Namibian dollars point 11 cents. 1 euro is equals to 18 Namibian dollars point 84 cents. 1 Australian dollar is equals to 11 Namibian dollars point 32 cents. 1 United Arab Emirates dirham is equals to 4 Namibian dollars and 39 cents. 1 pound sterling is equals to 21 Namibian dollars and 41 cents. 1 Botswana pula is equals to 1 Namibian dollar and 21 cents. 1 Kenyan shilling is equals to 0.12 Namibian dollars. And that's what we had for you today in terms of currency, comparing the Namibian dollar to other currencies. Now, let's move on to news beyond the borders of Namibia. And before we do that, let's just pause here quickly and we'll be back right now.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM, let's you express your concern.
And now let's get into the news beyond the borders of Namibia. We're starting off in South Africa. Let's listen on the chairperson of Parliament's Finance, that is Cluster Committee, having warned that South Africa has to maintain its momentum as it speaks about its role in the budget.
Of the Standing Committee on Finance, Dr. Joe Maswangani, noted that South Africa's financial prospects are looking better than in previous years.
After years of fiscal pressure, sovereign downgrades, and slow growth, South Africa has reached a critical milestone. Public debt is stabilizing. Borrowing costs are easing. Confidence is improving. But let me be clear, fiscal stability means nothing if it does not translate into jobs.
The budget
recognizes that the real test of recovery is whether South Africa can find work.
Maswangani mentioned the more than 1 trillion rand allocated to infrastructure, saying without functioning infrastructure, the country will not flourish. The chairperson of the Standing Committee on Appropriations, Dr. Musi Maimane, welcomed what he called green shoots, but cautioned that the country has a long way to go. He outlined some of the committee's priorities.
As a committee, we're not only taking the view of what does fiscal discipline look like, we'll also be engaging citizens on the ground with public hearings scheduled for KZN, and those dates will be sent so that we can hear from ordinary people what they want to say about their budget, because it's not yours and my money, it's a citizen's money.
The chairperson of the Standing Committee on Public Accounts, which is the financial watchdog of government spending, Sogezo Zibi, said the finance minister alone cannot ensure fiscal responsibility across hundreds of government authorities.
This expectation is unreasonable. Neither the finance minister nor the officials of the treasury are an omnipresence that watches administrative and policy decisions like a hawk to ensure that public funds are allocated and used efficiently. There's simply not enough of them to do that. Our constitutional scheme places a responsibility on every public institution and all public officials, like ourselves here from Parliament, to ensure that South Africans always get best value for their taxes. Parliament has an important role to play in this scheme.
Zibi said taxpayers' money, which goes to the national fiscus, will continue to be lost unless government considers policy and administrative decisions more carefully and puts an end to poor financial management and corruption. He said he and his colleagues in Parliament need to keep a closer watch over infrastructure spending, municipal financial management and cost-saving initiatives across government. Avery Barbier, SABC News, Parliament.
Still in South Africa, senior health officials in South Africa were arrested yesterday for allegedly using an 8-year-old company to siphon 1 million rand from the Global Fund.
Senior health officials were arrested yesterday for allegedly using an 8-day-old company to siphon 1 million rand from the Global Fund. Director General Sandile Buthelezi, Deputy Malikole Mahlathi and CFO Paswa Mamukhale appeared in the Pretoria Specialized Commercial Crimes Court. They were released on bail of 10,000 rand each. Now, News 24 has detailed how procurement laws were allegedly broken to divert funds meant for HIV, AIDS, TB and malaria treatment. News 24's investigative journalist Azara Karim joins us now for more on this story. Azara, thanks very much for your time. This is an incredibly worrying story for so many reasons, but perhaps particularly because the people involved are such senior officials in the health department. Allegedly involved, I should say.
Absolutely. So on Monday, the Director General, CFO, and the DDG of the Department of Health were arrested for misusing global fund money, around R1 million of it. And I think this is an important story because it's exactly where this money comes from. The Global Fund is an international health financier. It receives donations from numerous governments from all around the world, as well as massive international organizations like the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. And for this 2025 to 2028 period, the Global Fund has pledged around 6 billion rand to South Africa for these purposes. But it seems that that money is not being taken care of.
So the other shocking part of the story, of course, is the fact that an 8-day-old company was used. Where are the checks and balances when it comes to being able to pull something off, something like this off, if indeed all of these allegations are true?
Yeah. So News 24 obtained exclusive documents which draw a very detailed timeline of exactly how that money was siphoned away from the Global Fund through the 8-day-old company. And in fact, in 2024, the Auditor General had made findings of exactly that company called Itani Amen, saying that there were procurement red flags, tax evasion red flags, as well as conflicts of interest. And even back then, it seems that nothing was done about it. Our reporting this morning shows how Itani Amen invoiced the department for forensic investigation work into advocate Maile Ngake. And in those invoices, you can see there are no tax numbers, there's no tax deduction, there's no invoice number. And while the director of Itani Amen was appointed in her personal capacity, she was invoicing through the company. And so that's how the AG raised the red flag of tax evasion. We also show how the department still paid that money from the Global Fund and how finance and supply chain management were pressured to pay that money despite warnings that it would be irregular.
Mm. The other thing that you've reported on, Azara, is the fact that, or the contention that a whistleblower was targeted using this money. Can you explain that to us?
So News 24 reported a few years ago that advocate Maile Ngake had penned a report of over R1 billion irregular expenditure in the Northwest Department of Health. What's interesting is the appointment letter of Itani Amen that essentially says that this company has been appointed to go on a fact-finding mission. So there were no real allegations that were to be investigated, but rather a fact-finding mission into Maile Ngake and his workflow, how he handles cases as the chief of labor relations in South Africa. We also gave a bit of a snapshot of the report that was drafted, 11 pages of, in my opinion, supposition rather than facts.
Mm. As you say, News 24 has some time, for some time being reporting on the saga around the story. In fact, your reporting goes as far back as, and you'll tell us if it goes even further, but to February 2024. So this has been an ongoing investigation. But I suppose the question becomes, it's been 2 years now since New 24 first started reporting on this, the arrest and appearance in the Specialized Commercial Crimes Court happening yesterday. What's been happening over the course of that time in terms of official investigations?
So News 24, yes, you're correct. News 24 started reporting on the Director General about allegations that DG Dr. Sandile Botselezi solicited a 500,000 rand bribe from a contractor. That investigation was completed by the Hawks and is still with the NPA for a decision. Now, I have asked previously the Department of Health for comment on what's going on with that case and, you know, are they going to wait for, you know, Dr. Botselezi to be charged and then do something about it, which, yes, they will. The NPA, though, has had that docket for what
Morocco has positioned itself as a rising industrial and export powerhouse.
Well, let's shift our focus to Morocco now. The country is currently experiencing one of the most significant economic transformations on the African continent. It is moving past its reliance primarily on its tourism and agriculture sectors, and it is becoming a competitive industrial and export platform at the crossroads of Africa, Europe, and the Atlantic. Now, according to its Ministry of Industry and Trade, the industrial sector expanded to $98 billion in national production and around $43 billion in exports. As a result, Morocco is now attracting sustained investment in the sectors of aerospace, the automotive sector, and also advanced manufacturing. Now, this month, a subsidiary of French aerospace group, Safran, signed a deal to set up a landing gear factory worth $332 million in the country that will supply the Airbus A32 airplanes. Now, this factory, which is expected to start production in the year 2029, is set to be one of the largest of its kind and places Morocco basically amongst the few nations worldwide who assemble aircraft engines. Now, investments such as this are now moving Morocco further into more complex and high-value technologies. And earlier I spoke to Morocco's Minister of Industry and Trade, Riyad Mezour, about the latest investment and, of course, the country's plans to move up the industrial value chain across various sectors. Take a look.
We are very proud about having achieved, after many years of effort, this complexity and this trust in manufacturing the most sensitive and the most complex components of the aeronautical sector. What is the target? The target, for sure, under the leadership of His Majesty, is to have final assembly of a commercial or a military plane in the next few years.
And of course, this project will now make Morocco one of the select few who assemble and produce airplanes going forward. So pretty significant. And would like to know how this strategy in the aerospace sector to move up that value chain is going to translate to other industries beyond aerospace, such as the automotive sector, for example.
Well, automotive sector in Morocco is African leader. has a capacity installed now to produce 1 million vehicles a year and with an integration rate of 70%. That means 70% of the value of the parts that are assembled in Morocco are also made in Morocco. So we are very proud of what have been made in the automotive sector under the leadership of His Majesty the King. So translation is already happening between all sectors. Morocco is also the world leader in producing phosphate-based fertilizers, and we're very proud of that. Morocco is also the first exporter to Europe in terms of textile. But yes, the aeronautical sector is a sector that shows how complex our capability are, and if you are able to manufacture and to design a commercial aircraft engine in a country, that means you have reached a maturity and a complexity level that permits to host any type of technology and to develop any type of technology in the country.
Right. And in this growth, the development, the transition, we're now seeing Morocco emerge as a key manufacturing hub that links, of course, the African continent to European markets and also as a hub for Chinese investments. Give us a sense of what gives Morocco that competitive advantage over other markets in Africa and around the world. And I'm curious to know, how does the Africa Continental Free Trade Area and, of course, its target to boost regional integration, how does that fit into your strategy?
So we have a stability in terms of political stability, but we have also a financial and economical stability. That means investors in Morocco or people that invest in the Moroccan manufacturing platform know that we will comply with our commitment and there will be no change. after 2 years or 3 years when the political situation is evolving. This is very important for investment. Second, we made our homework. So under the leadership of His Majesty, we developed our infrastructure. We developed the biggest and the most performing port of the Mediterranean and of Africa. It is the third best performing port in the world. And these are huge investments. We invested heavily also in renewable energy, and this is very attractive for manufacturing investors. We invested also in free trade agreements, because we signed free trade agreements that give access to more than 100 countries, including the African continent. And we will focus after that on the African free trade agreement zone. And we invested also in our people. Thanks to His Majesty, Morocco is providing talent now. 180,000 young people coming out from university every year, and 330,000 young capabilities coming out from professional training every year.
Meanwhile, tensions escalate as the Middle East conflict widens.
General Usama. Well, earlier we spoke with retired General Usama Kabir, a military consultant at the Egyptian Command and Staff College. He shared his take on the trajectory of the conflict pitting the U.S. and Israel against Iran and its impact on the wider region.
Yes, we are expecting that, but truly, the diplomatic trend were going on, and Oman, Egypt, and Turkey, and other countries, and all the GCC countries were trying to stop this action before taking place on ground. As you can see now, the trajectory goes at least for a protracted war, prolonged war. Now they are exchanging missiles, launching from here to there, and now we can see civilians now are the casualties. So this is very dangerous now, and that's what we spoke about. This is what the Egyptian diplomacy actually talked about like too many times. And the time you start launching this war, it will negatively implicate all the region, all the Middle East region. So it's getting a larger scale, bit by bit, maybe not bit by bit, maybe it will be quick, because after the three killed from the United States military, I would say the Americans will be much more aggressive in the pretty much soon. What's happening now, that it's an American-Israeli combination against Iran. To the qualitative or the quantitative, at least military edge, Now the comparisonship is not at the side of Iran, but yes, Iran still can hit. Iran can cause damages, and we start seeing that now on television. We have some officials speaking. Donald Trump speaking about 5 days of bombardment and shelling, while his Secretary of Defense, Pete Hicks, speaking about 15 days. Now, from the other side, we hear about Israel Katz, the Minister of Foreign Affairs of Israel, speaking about endless war till it accomplish its objectives and military objectives and political objectives. This is such a chaotic situation we have here. In you don't start thing, you cannot finish. First of all, when the United States invaded Afghanistan in 2002, and then they invaded Iraq in 2003, that was very harshing. And I'll say that even in the House of Representatives and the Congress of the United States of America, we're going against that. Like too many of them were going against that. But the policy, okay, they went to Iraq, they went to Afghanistan. So what happened? We have two countries a little bit. One of them is almost weak. The other one is fragile. And we have like too many casualties in the American military. And we have like implications that extended for more than two decades up to now to the Middle East. So this time, why we need to go to Iran? I mean, Iran is different. Also, Iran, they have an army. They have a qualitative military edge within their missiles. They have the AUDs. They have the RPGs. They have around a million the ground forces, people, personnel, like on ground. If something would take place on ground, maybe in the future, they will never know it. So, I mean, this approach, the clock or the coverage, the story that you need to topple off the Mullah regime and to make the Middle East safer, how is it going to be safer now? We need to get to the table again and put the papers on it. Hey, guys, let's talk about that. I mean, what's the use? What's the end state? What are the main objectives you want to accomplish or achieve in Iran? It's not by toppling up the mullah. It's not by, I mean, like, to diminish their their nuclear program. Actually, Iran is a partner in the NPT. He's speaking about the what is called the non-proliferation treatment since 1997, and they signed that. And they went to the agreement on 2015, what we call this P5 plus one, speaking here about the five power countries and plus Germany. When they signed that with Barack Obama, I think was the president of the United States by that time, and Jawad Zarif, the prime minister of Iran. And they got to a deal, but this deal get being canceled and then thrown to the wall in 2017. So, I mean, we can deal about that. Iran's not going to hit anyone. Iran is not going to attack Israel. And they understand that. So let's get to the diplomacy again. And Egypt is playing a pivotal main role within that. And we're still calling for that. And we condemn the Iranian, actually, attacks and aggression against the GCC.
Donald Trump declares war on Iran's nuclear program.
Donald Trump says he ordered the military attack on Iran to thwart Tehran's nuclear developments and ballistic missile program. Trump offered his most extensive comments about the war beyond two earlier pre-recorded video messages and a series of brief telephonic media interviews over the weekend that offered sometimes conflicting objectives in the conflict.
Today, the United States military continues to carry out large-scale combat operations in Iran to eliminate the grave threats posed to America by this terrible terrorist regime. Following our obliteration of Iran's nuclear program in Operation Midnight Hammer a short while ago, we warned Iran not to make any attempt to rebuild at a different location because they were unable to use the ones that we so powerfully blew up. But they ignored those warnings and refused to cease their pursuit of nuclear weapons. In addition, the regime's conventional ballistic missile program was growing rapidly and dramatically, and this posed a very clear, colossal threat to America and our forces stationed overseas. The regime already had missiles capable of hitting Europe and our bases both local and overseas, and would soon have had missiles capable of reaching our beautiful America.
Well, let's unpack this further with SABC News correspondent Sherwin Price Peace joining us from New York. Sherwin, it was quite clear that on the eve of this attack, the reports at least that were coming out was that Iran made a number of incredibly profound concessions in that negotiations that was mediated by Oman as the interlocutor there. And importantly, Iran had conceded to let go of its enriched uranium, which is enriched to about 6%, which the Israelis and Americans claim is enough to form 10 nuclear warheads, while Iran maintains that it was entirely for energy purposes. And of course, Donald Trump had last year claimed that the three strikes in Tehran had obliterated the nuclear enrichment plants. Was any of that addressed in any of the messages and addresses that he's done over the weekend?
Yes, absolutely. And in the midst of the fog of war, in addition to the confusion that you've just laid out about, you know, what narrative are we to believe here, President Trump earlier today talking about how essentially the reason for the strike on Iran, the joint Israeli-U.S. operation, is to prevent Iran from acquiring a nuclear weapon. But that is exactly what the diplomatic talks mediated by Oman, the last iteration of which was held in Geneva, Switzerland on Thursday. And the foreign minister of Oman came out on U.S. media, including with CBS News, explaining some of the key concessions that you've just talked about in terms of that uranium enrichment and the stockpiling thereof, which the U.S. and Western powers argue is a pathway to a nuclear weapon, despite the Iranians saying that the purposes of their nuclear program was essentially for academic and energy purposes, essentially for peaceful means. Therein lies this contradiction. Who are we going to believe now? The Omanis are saying an opportunity was missed here. That has been echoed by the UN Secretary General, who obviously favors a diplomatic approach to the resolution of all disputes, international disputes. And wants the UN Charter to be, the tenets of the UN Charter to be observed, a territorial integrity, sovereignty of member states, and not to try to settle disputes through war and violence. And so where we go from here is a concern around the regional dynamics of this. This is not just a war now between the United States, Israel and Iran. There are implications for Gulf countries. Iran is targeting in its retaliation, which it is asserting in light of Article 51 of the United Nations Charter, which allows it to defend itself under armed attack. The concern here is that this is now going to become a regional conflict with regional implications and the humanitarian consequences, Oliver, that stems from that. I had an interaction with the Secretary General's spokesperson, Stefan Dujarric, earlier today. Let's watch that and I'll come back right after. A reaction to the targeting of a head of state here, so soon after Venezuela's sitting head of state was removed and arrested and brought to the United States. What is your reaction to the U.S.'s unilateral actions in those in that regard?
Well, I mean, I think the reaction to the action we've seen by the U.S. and Israel, the Secretary General laid it out very plainly on Saturday, and that remains his position.
I wondered if you could talk a little bit about the expanding humanitarian consequences, particularly when there are wars, right? On an already overstretched humanitarian community, what does scenario planning look for the Tom Fletchers and the Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs? How do you plan for this moment?
Well, we planned by having had contingency plans already in place. I mean, the impact here is multifold, right? You could have, obviously, a humanitarian impact in Iran, right? And we're already seeing the killings of civilians in other countries in the Gulf. What is particularly worrying as well is the closure of airspace. And, you know, the UN has humanitarian hubs in the Gulf, notably in the UAE. A lot of our humanitarian goods move through that. So it could very well have an impact on our operations in Africa, in Asia, and other parts of the world. We're already talking about a humanitarian system which is extremely stretched and heavily underfunded. And this is an issue that, I mean, I was just talking to our humanitarian colleagues a few minutes ago that they're worried about, and they're looking at what the impact will be on our logistics operation. I mean, the UN has a
And with that, we have come to the conclusion of today's episode of On the Radar News Analysis. To stay tuned for the Onkonana Dingi program brought to you by Loise Shimi. And of course, the Home Run Show with Dwight and Helmut from 1630, the Business Economic segment with David Chombe from 1800 Hours. And from Indafa, happy Juju. It is goodbye. I'll see you again tomorrow. Same time, same place. And I should be interested in listening to today's news bulletin over again, please do head over to our podcast session. Goodbye.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa eva tere uliko ni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku dite opoye ekukurile. Oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano ile koshiwana. Onongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo IGL FM otuna evi tota njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa. Nune uto otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe faa omarudi tayo loka. Opone ushendi fenawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa. Inge kwa tafanona Monica ko IGL FM onora etatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile kongerewa, nora hetatu natu, bali o hetatu batatu, o mafilane, egelefem, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Simon, don't worry about those small things. Contact EGLFM. EGLFM has a dedicated team. The eye.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Omutiha, utekiroka guna, iimatina omjo.
chikao shafa sana na na longe shifa ya shiwike moshi wana iye moya wo ota ingongo tisa mwene ana ge shifa ya Namibia ombito ombwa na wa olonjika zeitha nina omayaguro ni randi toma yoe yonge shifa yoe okupikira mo Eagle FM Media House ngoe tuende tuimemeha uka kombanga nina kara omkwashi pareki uimepo yomo programa detu moambo dengira selma konara hita tuimu Datundatu Heari Hamanotano on the Arch. Eagle FM, the Eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM.